God is still on the throne, and prayer changes things.
This is Pastor Larry. It is always a privilege to be able to share with our listeners current events and biblical truths that affect all of us. There is a serious push in the U.S. House to remove Speaker Pelosi. Amid threats by Nancy Pelosi to impeach President Trump for his Supreme Court nomination, the conservative House Freedom Caucus forced a meeting of the House's entire Republican conference to discuss a motion to vacate the chair, forcing Pelosi to step down as House Speaker. In a statement on Twitter, the Freedom Caucus said, "Pelosi's latest impeachment threat is proof that she would rather use her post as Speaker to weaponize the chamber than as a means of accomplishing anything of substance for the country." Representative Andy Biggs of Arizona said the effort has been developing for several months, and the most recent discussion was whether the timing was right or not. "The timing is right," he explained, "because of the notion that she would even allow the suggestion of impeachment of the president for seeking to fill the vacancy on the Supreme Court resulting from the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg." Pelosi has threatened to impeach the president for not allowing the man selected by voters on November the 3rd to fill the vacancy on the Supreme Court. President Trump has commented that he was elected president for a 4-year term, not for 3 years and 11 months. As things heat up on the political scene, Christians need to pray fervently that God would have mercy on America. I'm so happy to have our dear brother and friend Michael Samuel Smith back with us for this show. We've been talking about his new DVD, American Destiny, 400 Years. If you heard the first program, there are so many parallels that Brother Mike has picked out between America and Israel, things that I never saw before, but when you look at the numbers, they're there. Brother Mike, thank you so much for being with us and for this really important DVD, especially at this time in American history.
Well, thank you, Pastor Larry, and I'd like to say happy anniversary to all the American people, the 400th anniversary, of course, of the Mayflower and 1620 to 2020. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, I think you're doing a great service to America, to the world, and certainly to the church. But as we get started, since you spent a lot of time discussing the Pilgrim story in the DVD, you said in your DVD, their story is really the bedrock foundation of what America is all about. Take a few minutes, Brother Mike, and share some of the highlights of that.
Well, thank you. I was sitting in a classroom at Renfro School in Adams, Massachusetts, actually in 1956. I learned about the Pilgrims, as strange people who wore funny-looking hats and shoes with belt buckles on them, and, of course, carrying their funny-looking turkey guns in hand. It really wasn't until I was in my 50s and 60s that I became curious about them and wanted to find out what role did they really play in influencing the laws and liberties we all enjoy now in our republic. I knew I had to connect several dots and had to go and learn from great scholars who researched this subject many years, like Sue Ellen of the UK, Dr. Marshall Foster, and Dr. Paul Jehle. His name is spelled J-E-H-L-E. Who we give credit to at the end of our film, of course. It was during the time of King James I, English Bibles were starting to be printed for regular people. Even though our King James Bible is the true word of God, I believe, there's another side of King James that most folks don't know. He was a tyrant towards the Bible-believing people who believed God's word put God on top instead of the king. These evangelical Christians who took a strong stand on God's word were called Puritans because they wanted to purify the corrupt practices of the Church of England. Kind of sounds like today, Pastor Larry. So King James passed an edict in 1593, making the Puritans a separatist group that was an enemy of the state, which means the Puritans are guilty of treason. They were highly discriminated against, so they felt it was time to leave England. The plan was to go to Leiden, Holland, so that their children could practice their faith and freedom and ultimately take the gospel to the world. And that was their mission statement. We don't have the time to cover much because there's many twists and turns to the story. But in our DVD, The Pilgrim Story, most of you have really never heard. And our film is the most detailed film ever made about the Pilgrims. They were on the brink of death on several occasions. Even the women and children went to prison twice before coming to America on the Mayflower. We want the audience to know this DVD we have is a real show and tell, all done in high definition. We spent nearly a year getting just the pictures you'll see. And you and your families, children and grandchildren, will all be stunned when you see this amazing story, seeing all the death-defying sacrifices these people made, which ultimately was for us and our freedoms. Originally, there were two ships with pilgrims aboard attempting to sail to America, the Mayflower and the Speedwell. Shortly after secretly departing England, the Speedwell sprang a leak and had to stay behind in England. Their church leader, John Robinson, was on the Speedwell and looked after the pilgrims that had to stay behind. This is how William Bradford would now become the leader for those going to America on the Mayflower. Somewhere over the Atlantic, the main beam of the Mayflower developed a leak. The captain knew, if we don't fix this, it's over for us. As far as being survived, they really trusted God. Bradford led a prayer to God, and William Brewster got the idea of a wooden screw that might stop the leak on the main beam. And in fact, it actually did work. There were 102 passengers on the Mayflower and a crew of 30. No sea captain would make a trip so late in the year because of snow and ice conditions in the Atlantic. But keep in mind, if the pilgrims got caught leaving England, it could be a capital punishment for them because they were an illegal group. It was now or never to leave England. The passenger compartment was only 4.5 feet tall. The people were so seasick most of the time, constantly, and the restroom situation was terrible. Their intended destination was near New York around the Hudson River Valley, but were blown off course by strong winds. They actually ended up at a point near Provincetown, Massachusetts, on the east bank of Cape Cod, which was a very thin area of land with snow and ice on it. As William Bradford's wife stepped off the ship, she slipped into the water and drowned. She was the first one to die. A few weeks later, they moved the ship over to the west side of the Cape and landed on Plymouth Rock. The Mayflower Compact was actually written on November 11, 1620, but the actual landing at Plymouth Rock, the final destination, was on the 21st of December, 1620. Did you know the landing at Plymouth Rock happened during the Jewish feast of Hanukkah? In fact, it was the third day of Hanukkah. Just for the record, wanted you to know, and this December 2020 is the 400th anniversary of that event. Just as freedom came to the Jews in Egypt 3,500 years ago in their 400th year, we celebrate our freedom from political tyranny in our 400th year since 1620 with the Mayflower. The first 4 months after arriving in Massachusetts, it was a brutal winter for the pilgrims. Each night, the women and children went back to the Mayflower to sleep. The women slept on top of the children to keep them alive. After 4 months, of the 102 that came over with the Mayflower, 47 had died, nearly half. By April 1621, most of the women were dead and most of the children survived. Wow, what a story.
It's so sad to me that these radical Antifa people and the rioters are trashing our great country. I think our listeners, when they hear the information that you brought out, will be even more outraged. We're pretty outraged as it is now, but this is good stuff. Well, Brother Mike, aside from discussing Pocahontas in our last interview, there's another Native American Indian that is in the Pilgrim story, you say in your film. If it wasn't for this one Indian, there's a good chance the Pilgrims wouldn't have survived. You also said his picture is on the Massachusetts state flag. What is the name of this American Indian, and what was his relationship with William Bradford and the Pilgrims?
Well, the Native American Indians whose picture is on the Massachusetts state flag is none other than Squanto. He plays one of the most important parts in the survival of the Pilgrims. When you see our DVD about the Pilgrims and their association with the Indians, you will quickly see this relationship is very much different than the situation 13 years earlier at Jamestown, Virginia. This was because the settlers at Plymouth treated the Indians as equals. When's the last time you heard that in your high school class? William Bradford and the Pilgrims loved and admired Squanto. He taught the Pilgrims how to fish and plant crops, utilizing dead fish bodies to be used as fertilizer. showing them what kind of food could be grown and what herbs could be eaten and used as medicine. In his journal, which survives to this day, Bradford said of Squanto, and I quote, "Squanto was a special instrument sent of God for their good beyond their expectation," close quote. You might be very interested to know when the pilgrims first met Squanto, he spoke English. How did that come about? Well, Squanto was a member of the Patuxent tribe, which lived near Plymouth. Years earlier, Squanto was captured by an English sea captain and taken to Malaga, Spain, and sold into slavery. A couple Catholic friars bought him. They were very good to Squanto and taught him Christianity. It was Squanto's desire to go to England and make his way back to Massachusetts. Believe it or not, he actually did make it to England, where he learned English, and we cover that entire story in our film and the men who helped Squanto get back to Massachusetts. About a year before the Mayflower arrived in Plymouth, Squanto found himself right where he left years before in Plymouth. Unfortunately, all the Indians in his Patuxent tribe had died, probably of smallpox. Squanto was the only survivor in his tribe. I don't know if you can see the hand of God in all this, but I do. And if Squanto died with his tribe, the pilgrims probably wouldn't have survived. It was because Squanto was sold into slavery in Spain that preserved his life to be used for such a time as that.
Yes, what a tremendous picture of the hand of God, Almighty God's providence working, preserving, and bringing to fruition the establishment of a great nation. Well, in your DVD, you said Cape Cod, Massachusetts is the shape of a Hebrew letter. And I think, you know, I'm just thinking of looking at a map, and yes, that's true. And that letter had meaning behind it. And you also said the geography of America is laid out in a way it forms a picture of the tabernacle in the wilderness. As you know, Brother Mike, most of us have never heard of anything like that in our history classes. If what you are saying is true, this DVD shows another hand of God that's been completely overlooked. So if you don't mind, take us through that.
Well, about 18 years before the Mayflower arrived, Cape Cod was discovered by Bartholomew Gosnold on the 15th of May, 1602. On that same calendar day in 1948, which was May 15th, Israel actually pulled up their flag for the first time. So there's a comparison there. You may think that could be far-fetched, but actually Cape Cod is in the shape of the Hebrew letter Tet, that's T-E-T. As you know, every Hebrew letter has a numerical value to it, and the letter Tet equals number 9. So actually, how did the ancient rabbis come up with that it's number 9? Well, actually, they looked at Abraham and Sarah. Abraham was 99 years old, and Sarah was 90 years old when God told them that they would have a son of promise. And that's basically where they came up with the number 9. Now, the point that I really wanted to make is that letter Tet actually has two meanings. It has a negative meaning. It's shaped like the coil of a snake. But the positive meaning to it is it represents birth. It's actually a baby in its mother's womb. So what is the meaning behind Cape Cod in the shape of the letter Tet? It's the birth of a nation. And let me say also that as far as the tabernacle in the wilderness, if you look at a map of the United States, there is a comparison with the tabernacle in the wilderness during the time of Moses. Going east to west, as you come in the tabernacle, there's a brazen altar, of course, made up of iron ore. What does that compare to in the United States? Well, actually, the state of Pennsylvania. So I want you to think we're going to go from east to west across the United States. Well, the next thing you come across is a laver of water in the tabernacle. Do we have anything like that in America? Well, actually, we do, and we call it the Great Lakes. Okay, so now we go from the outer court to the inner court. When we get into the inner court, if you look to the north, there's the showbread. Do we have something like that in America? We do, and we call it the breadbasket of America, where the wheat is grown. And then when you look to the south in the tabernacle, you see the menorah, which primarily is fueled by oil, of course. Do we have anything like that in the middle of America looking south? We do, the state of Texas and the oil refineries. Okay, the next thing we have is the altar of incense. As we continue to go west in the tabernacle in the wilderness, do we have anything like that? Of course, they would burn incense in there of spices, if you will. Do we have anything like that in America? Well, actually, we do in the state of Colorado. They actually produce many spices as well. Then we come to the veil of separation. Of course, there's a veil in the temple, correct? And there's the Ark of the Covenant behind that. Well, do we have something like a veil in America? We do, and we call it the Continental Divide of America, the Rocky Mountains. And then we come to the Golden Room, of course, in the temple, and we see the Ark of the Covenant there. Do we have anything like that in America? Well, actually, we do, and we call it the State of Texas, the Golden State. And, of course, that is where Ronald Reagan is buried. Well, that's my story about America as a type and shadow of the tabernacle in the wilderness.
Well, we are just about out of time, but I noticed that you've interviewed a very special guest, Reverend Dan Fisher, who's a great friend of Southwest Radio Church, and he's been a guest speaker at many of our conferences talking about the American Revolution. And, wow, this is really a great, great work that you have done. Thank you so much, dear brother.
Thank you.
Matthew will now come to the mic and tell our listeners how they can get this invaluable tool, American Destiny, 400 Years, very, very helpful and very, very inspirational.
Thank you, Pastor Larry. Our special offer today is perfect for the upcoming election. It is the new DVD titled American Destiny, 400 Years. You can have a copy for a gift of $20 if you live in the United States and $35 if you live in Canada. To place your order, just call our toll-free number 1-800-652-1144. You can also order by writing to us at Post Office Box 76834, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma 73147. And of course, you can order this exciting DVD on our website at swrc.com. At the end of this DVD is an interview Michael Smith did with Pastor Dan Fisher about the Black-Robed Regiment. The Black-Robed Regiment is the name given to the pastors and preachers who helped General George Washington win the American Revolution. With that in mind, we are also making available to our listeners the 488-page book by Pastor Dan Fisher titled The Black-Robed Regiment. You can have a copy for a gift of $30. Better yet, get both the DVD, American Destiny, 400 Years, and the book, The Black-Robed Regiment, for a gift of $45. The number to call is 1-800-652-1144. The address to write is Post Office Box 76834, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma 73147. And our website is swrc.com. Here again is Pastor Larry.
Maria DiMezzo, a self-described transsexual Satanist anarchist, has won the Republican nomination for sheriff in Cheshire County, New Hampshire. DiMezzo says her victory proves the system is utterly and hopelessly broken. DiMezzo, who ran with the campaign slogan, "Blank the Police," says she had expected to lose to a write-in candidate. DiMezzo garnered 4,211 votes, easily beating a traditional candidate who received only a few hundred votes.
In a Friday blog post, DiMezzo said she opposes a system that allowed thousands of people to walk into a voting booth and vote despite knowing absolutely nothing about the person they were nominating to the most powerful law enforcement position in the county. Quote, "I'm running for sheriff because I oppose that very system, and the sheriff has the most hands-on ability in Cheshire County to oppose that system," DiMezzo said. "The system that let you down by allowing me, the blank transsexual Satanist anarchist, be your sheriff candidate is the same system I'm attacking. I'm sorry, and I know it hurts to hear, but that system is a lie. The entire thing is a lie. It's broken from beginning to end, and my existence as your sheriff candidate is merely how this reality was thrown in your face." Close quotes.
One of the keys to prosperity for any nation is its industry. as we have been considering the 45 goals of communism today, originally presented in W. Cleon Skousen's book, The Naked Communist. We'll take a look at goal 36, infiltrate and gain control of more unions. A Marxist key tenet was workers unite. That might sound appealing to workers who have been led to believe management is getting rich at their expense. But imagine what would have happened if management of major corporations would have been given to the worker. Oh, wait. Detroit, the city built by the auto industry, became union-heavy and went bankrupt in 2013. No TV game show offers an all-expense-paid vacation to Detroit for a very good reason. Union membership peaked in 1954, when nearly 35% of American workers were union members. By 2013, that percentage was 11.3%. That's combined public and private sector. Even today, government workers, the largest segment, are unionized to more than 35%. Why? It's to their benefit, partially because the government employee lives off the labor of the tax-paying public, and pay and benefits are moderately above private sector equal jobs with fewer work hours. Unions have driven the compensation numbers up. Too many major as well as lesser corporations were driven out of business when private ownership yielded to union management. Chalk one more up to Marxism's plan to break the back of a free enterprise nation. Goal number 37 is infiltrate and gain control of big business. Similar, yet different than goal 36, big business is a prime target since it has the ability to reach anyone through the existing infrastructure. As communism in several nations has been a disaster, in others, leaders were smart and used business as a leverage tool to become exporters of their resources to other nations. Friendly nations became markets, and their financial fortunes increased. If they didn't mention their foundation as communism or Marxism too loudly, they usually were able to get away with bringing other nations under dependency and economic control. One more goal achieved. Goal 45, internationalize the Panama Canal. Consider the strategic importance of the Panama Canal. Ship traffic has only one other alternative to the Equatorial Area Passage. That involves going nearly to the South Pole to get between the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans and beyond. The United States occupied the canal zone until September 7, 1977. Finally, on December 31, 1999, former President Jimmy Carter attended the ceremony, finally passing full control to the Panamanian government, which promised to keep it safe and neutral. Since 2017, 19 Central American and Caribbean nations, including Panama, have been developing increasingly strong ties with China. If tensions between the U.S. and China continue to escalate, the canal could become one of the most strategic properties in the world. Free access to the canal is an international commerce and defense imperative.
The Bible presents propositional truth that can be defined in terms of right and wrong, good and bad. In Galatians 1 verse 6 we read, I marvel that ye are so soon removed from him that called you into the grace of Christ unto another gospel. Truth can be so defined that you can say that a man has departed from it or that he holds opinions that are definitely wrong. With this in mind, it is hard to believe that Pastor Tim Keller is arguing that voting and making choices for candidates is somehow religiously neutral.
At a Gospel Coalition conference, Keller went on to declare that Democrats and Republicans, quote, offer a potpourri of different positions on these and many other topics, most of which the Bible does not speak to directly, close quotes. Keller explains and states, quote, this means when it comes to taking political positions, voting, determining alliances and political involvement, the Christian has liberty of conscience. Christians cannot say to other Christians, no Christian can vote for blank, or every Christian must vote for blank, unless you can find a biblical command to that effect, close quotes.
It is hard to understand how Pastor Keller can make such statements. Some candidates are decidedly for things that the Bible is clearly against. Should we vote for a candidate who wants to condemn pastors who preach the whole counsel of God, which is, to say the least, sometimes very politically incorrect? Do we have no guidance from God when one candidate advocates abortion on demand and another says human life is sacred?
One pastor from Georgia objected to Keller's comments. Quote, "Hey, Tim, no Christian should vote for anyone who advocates the murders of babies in the womb, and in some cases, like the governor of Virginia, even after they're born," close quotes.
Keller gave a feeble response to some of the criticisms, believing that many of his opponents had misinterpreted his remarks as saying he supported legalized abortion. "The Bible tells me," said Keller, "that abortion is sin and great evil, but it doesn't tell me the best way to decrease or end abortion in this country, nor which policies are most effective," close quotes. Well, Pastor Keller, do you think that forcing taxpayers to pay for abortions is a good way to cut down on abortions?
At root, it is a matter of loyalty. Are we going to stand for righteousness? Do we have the duty to vote for the candidate who will support biblical principles and who will not waffle on important moral issues? Jesus made it very clear when he said, "He who is not with me is against me." The radical Democrats are certainly not with Jesus. They are definitely against him, and they will promote legislation that violates Christian principles.
Pastor Robert Jeffers, First Baptist Church, Dallas, said, "Evangelicals who vote for Biden have sold their soul to the devil and accepted the Democrats' barbaric position on abortion." Tony Perkins, the head of the Family Research Council, has also made a case against Biden, arguing that Biden's claim to supporting the Catholic faith doesn't square with his radical position on abortion.
We are living in an age of moral darkness and compromise. Christians, and especially Christian leaders, must speak the truth in love. Despite what people say, we live in a binary world. There is male and female, right and wrong, truth and falsehood. We must not listen to pastors whose messages are soaked in moral equivocation.
Another excellent program. If you missed any of it, or if you want to hear it again, just go to our website at swrc.com and click on the Listen tab. Our programs are archived there. Don't forget our special offer today, the new DVD by Michael S. Smith, titled American Destiny, 400 Years, and the book by Pastor Dan Fisher, titled The Black-Robed Regiment. Just call our toll-free number, 1-800-652-1144. Thanks for tuning in today. Tune in tomorrow when Pastor Larry and Michael Smith finish this series on the Watchmen on the Wall program from Southwest Radio Church.